Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show 97 and this week's guest is Danny Kalkhoven. And Danny comes to talk with us about his anamorphic and his pinhole classes. Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show 97 of the Lensless Podcast, and I'm here with Andrew. Andrew, how are you?
Yeah, okay. Very refreshed after a
couple of weeks.
Two weeks away. I thought I wasn't able to do, hikes in the mountains anymore because I've got some arthritis in my big toe.
Uh-oh.
But we surprised ourselves. Yeah, we were out every day, and we were doing probably 7 or 8 miles a day, which was far enough, we were.
Oh yeah,
because we're talking up and down hills, and mm-hmm. So, and it was great, and every camera I took with me I used. I think mm-hmm. I did some trips with the large format pinhole camera, that Bob Rigby 50 millimeter focal length,
nice.
Sort of wide angle, and I had my Reality 6x6 and 6x12. So 6x12 I hadn't used in a good while, so it was nice to run some Ektar through that.
Nice.
And I reminded myself how devilishly difficult it is to load. I know when we introduce our guest in a minute or two, he has a 6x17 version. So in fact, tricky. But it was good. I used those. I took my big heavy RB67, and I used that when we went to visit some friends. I did some sort of environmental portraits. I used my Lomography Bel Air camera. I used my, what else did I use?
Wow.
I had a few with me.
Cool.
So it was good. I just didn't get through anywhere near the amount of film. I took way too much film with me.
As always.
So yeah, we've been back a few days, and it's been nice. Having a few days at home before I go back to work, and 3 more months to go, then I become a free agent.
A retiree.
Well, I've got a few irons in the fire. I'll be starting Fenland Camera and Darkroom. That's the little venture I'm starting next year.
That's awesome.
So that'll be one-on-one Fenland workshops, priced now, so I have to be careful what I say here, but there's there's a lot of workshops. Yeah, why should that stop me? There's a lot of workshops out there that are, I think, just really expensive, but then the guys have got a knowledge and there's a value to that. Well, I've got some knowledge, but maybe I'm not that clever, so I'm going to be pricing mine at what I'd be happy to pay, which is not a lot, really.
You're supposed to say competitively.
Well, yeah. So I'll be offering sort of large format introduction days, photography in the Fens, darkroom basics, lith printing. I don't know about salt printing; that might get too difficult. But certainly lith printing and whatever else folks want to do in the darkroom, really.
Cool.
So obviously the COVID situation is a bit of a problem at the moment. So. I'm going to spend the first 3 months making my darkroom a bit bigger. I need to make it a bit bigger, so I'm going to enlarge it by about 1 or 2 meters and push it back so I can just accommodate somebody a bit safer than I can at the moment,
Right.
And we'll be offering weekend options for folks, and evening meal, get my missus to do the cooking. That'll be a good one, that she can wait on us.
Sounds
so
exciting.
Yeah, plotting all that sort of stuff for next year, and we'll see.
Cool.
I won't make a living out of it, but if I can just cover the cost of buying film and paper, because I'm walking away from a pretty well-paid job, and we won't have anywhere near the income that I've had for the last 30 years.
I think you're underestimating your podcast career also.
Figured that? Don't get paid for that. Well, actually, we must remember to at least promote ourselves a little bit at the end, Corey, with our coffee page. So I'll remember to give a shout out for that.
Right.
Cool. But yeah, so do you think we'll? I don't think they'll ever earn our living from podcasting. Not with this rubbish show, anyway.
it'd be a bloody miracle.
Yeah. What's the weather like in North Carolina these days?
Cooling off. Little evenings are a little cooler, and the mornings are just mm-hmm. cooler, and so it's kind of nice. Kind of breaking into fall, you know. So yeah.
Yeah. Lovely.
Been a lot of it. We've had a couple storms kind of come close to us, but they just kind of skirted away, you know. So we've had a solid month of pretty decent waves. So I've been able to get a lot of time in the water. So
you've been surfing?
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some storms have been hitting, haven't they? And they looked like they were going to – they often hit and then move north, don't they, these mm-hmm. storms? So yep. I didn't know whether they'd reach you or not.
Sometimes they do, but by the time it gets to us, it's just been, you know, like a rain system. The Gulf is what's taken a lot of the brunt so far of storms. You know,
count your blessing. Count your blessings that you're not getting those fires, though.
Yeah. So season's not over yet, but you know we're getting close. So hopefully we'll make it through it without any major problems. And
yeah, hopefully. And you're getting ready to go on a hiking trip.
Yeah, I'm going to be going tomorrow, which will be Monday, for 4 days. We're going to go hike on the Appalachian Trail, actually.
Mm.
30 miles. Up and down and up and down. So, yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm going to bring my only camera I have left. I've clean house. Well, no, I actually have two. But I'm going to finish off a roll of that in my reality 6x6. So I'm going to bring that and finish it off. And,
What's the other camera you've still got left then?
My box turtle, the one I got from Todd. Okay. Yeah. Those are pretty much going to be my two go-tos, you know?
Yeah.
I had a bunch of stuff I just wasn't using. It was just sitting around, honestly, and mm-hmm. trying to get my storage locker cleaned out. And I said...
It's very commendable. And, you know, that lots of people have the need to get rid of stuff. But me too, I've got rid of stuff over the years. But I'm too scared to get rid of things now because I think... I won't ever be able to afford them again the way stupid prices are for film gear. You
know? Well, for me, the way the reason I wasn't using some of the stuff was more, you know, just I don't want to deal with the 4x5 hoarders, so I'm probably not going to be using them anymore, you know, and they're just sitting in storage. So nothing, not that there's anything wrong with them. Everything worked great, you know, just wasn't for mm-hmm. me. So yeah. But. We have a guest who has a lot of cameras also. And so this week we have Danny. Here we go. Kalkhoven. Did I say that right, Danny?
Perfect.
Okay. So there you go. Hi. And Danny is in the Netherlands and he's talking to us today.
You said that in a slightly Dutch accent. Did you mean to do that?
I did. I didn't tell you that I have a Dutch accent also. And have an English accent. How are you, Danny? Sitting so patiently listening to me and Andrew waffle on about randomness.
Yes. Well, I'm good. Thank you. And I heard some interesting things from Andrew. You know, things
not
like
Corey. Not Corey, though.
No.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. From both of you, but some things that Andrew said immediately got me thinking and thinking back and things like that. So I never have too much film on me on a holiday. I always have, I wish it took more. So on our last trip this summer, I took 8 rolls with me. And somehow halfway through the holiday, I crave for more.
Wow.
8 rolls. Was that just like 2 days or something or like,
a month
longer.
No, it's 8 rolls, but when you have, for instance, the 6x17, it's 4 shots. So,
it's quick. It's too quick.
Yeah, but it's also a matter of balance between celebrating holiday with the family and going out for shooting. Yeah. And these are things that you should not necessarily mix. I have learned through the years. So. Yeah,
there's a time and place for everything.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
Yep. I kind of agree with you.
You're just selfish, Andrew.
Well, no. No, you see, it's... if I want to go and do large format photography with a tripod, I wouldn't inflict that on family.
Yeah, you know? Sure.
But Julie's really used to me, you know, just having one or two cameras or more with me on every trip. And, you know, pinhole, she's constantly used to me plonking pinhole cameras down. Yeah. I think she's kind of okay with it. Well, she hasn't told me if she, after all these years, you know, we've been, she's been carrying my tripod for 35 years. So, you know.
Wow.
She should have That's spoke good. Up before now. So how long have you been, what's your story with pinhole photography, Danny? Have you been a resurgence with it, or is it something that you've always been kind of clicking along with for a while? And
well, the story is, I was what you say, you might say, a regular amateur photographer, you know, decent shots, using composition, depth of field, etc., etc., joining a photo club. And then after a while, I joined some photography course. And back in 2002, well, it wasn't really a course. It was mere, you know, a period of time where the teacher coached the pupils in by giving them assignments or challenges to improve on their photography. And with me, he quickly noticed that I was kind of a gear freak and a control freak. You know, coming from 35 millimeters to medium format, and growing from an old Rollei cord to some second-hand or third-hand Hasselblad, in the vague hope that buying ever better cameras would improve your photography. Now, we all know that isn't true, but still. So that teacher challenged me to do something with pinhole. He said, you might try pinhole to get away from that control freak, gear freak attitude. And I started that in 2002. And somehow it fitted me and my photography and, you know, the interest for the motifs and scenes that I like. It fitted like a glove, so I never turned back. So I started pinhole photography then and gradually sold all my lens equipment, some of which I regret, I admit, and collected and started building and buying pinhole cameras. So that's how it started. And the amazing thing is, you know, I since about 5-6 years, I give lectures in on photography clubs, and there I also say that in some way, when I switched over to pinhole, somehow it all came together. And since then, also things like having an exhibition, and being admitted to some galleries or amateur contests suddenly started to happen. And before that, it was very seldom that I was selected or chosen, something like that. So somehow, it won't be for everybody, but somehow pinhole fitted me and my photography.
Cool. Did you have with your lensed cameras? Did you have a liking towards sort of long exposures? Did that lead you into pinhole? Or?
No, not particularly. But I did have a liking for, you might say, mundane or what is it in English word? Ubiquitous scenes.
Yeah.
You know, things you should not, you never notice.
Everyday moments.
Moments, or you know, that special light in a humble bus stop, something like that. And somehow, I did not succeed in capturing that emotions or that feeling that I had and simply turned out a okay photograph. You know, it was sharp and it was well composed and things like that, but it stayed there. And somehow with Pinhole, the amazing thing is that you lose control because there's no viewfinder, there's no focusing. In the long exposures, sometimes things happen that you don't control. Things moving, people coming in or out of the frame. And somehow that all turns out okay every time. So all the accidents which I, in the old days, I used to be very annoyed, now I welcome them, and it improves the imagery. So that's something amazing.
Yeah, definitely.
And you like to include yourself. I know, as a semi-transparent ghost in the image, which is something that appeals to me as well. And I think Corey likes a bit of movement in your pictures, don't you?
Yeah.
Not immediately. In the first year or two or something like that, I was also discovering Pinhole. You know, the endless depth of field, coming up close, the long exposure, etc., etc. So when the next year I took that same class with that same trainer, that same coach, with the Pinhole cameras, you know, he challenged me. Okay, he said, now you've proven, you have proven that you can do this with Pinhole, you can do that with Pinhole. Now go and try to find your thing or the things you want to express. And the first thing that I stumbled upon was a series that is still continuing now, is where I put the Pinhole camera on a table in a cafe or a restaurant or something like that, up close to the cup of coffee or the beverage or the meal for that matter. And then, you know, it's always inside, so you have exposure times of 5, 10, 15 minutes, and then all kind of things happen. The cup gets lifted and gets put back, but not exactly at the same place. So that was a kind of discovery of, it was fascinating, because normally, unless you're very drunk, you don't lay your head on the table and look at things in that perspective.
Yeah.
So that was the first series where I thought, well, here you have something where Pinhole shows you a series of things in time, in one image, at a way we don't look at it normally. And it's very humble. It's just a white coffee cup, or it's just a glass of beer or something like that. But when you look at it up close from below like this, you get amazingly beautiful pictures. And then gradually I more and more I took the camera out outside, and then you discover, when you do that, and people are moving or are moving a bit, you know, they are rendered as semi-transparent ghosts in the image, which is beautiful. So nowadays I do that more and more often, and when there's no one around, I open the shutter. I position myself in the scene, try to stand very still for about half or three quarters of the exposure, and then run back and go after the camera and close the shutter.
Mm-hmm.
So it evolved from inside to outside, and from things to people.
That I had, as you were talking, I had an image of, you know, in a busy city centre, you know, and I don't know when we can go back to busy city centres, but, you know, I imagine putting my reality, so subtle 6x6, on you know, on a crossing where you press the button for walk, don't walk. Put your camera on there, and just you, as for the self-portraits, stand still for, you know, half the time, as everybody is milling around you, you know. Yeah. and you, so you've got streams of people coming past you, but you're just the one semi-fixed point, you know, and you could that would be a wonderful series of things to do if we ever get to go back to those busy city scenes.
Well, here in the Netherlands, in my hometown, when you go on to the city center on a Saturday, it's almost like COVID isn't existing anymore. So it's a bit scary sometimes because we, you know, the Dutch people are perhaps being too loose again. But you see it happening, and then, for my work, I go to London each year. Well, not this year, but the past years, for a conference, and then I take the pinhole camera, and in my experience, there's always something near you you can put your camera on. I have those very little tripods, who are just I think they're from Gorillapod, but not the Gorillapod you put on, but just a very tiny, tiny, very low tripod.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can put it almost anywhere. There's always a garbage bin or the handle of a door or a small wall. And in my experience, if you then open the shutter for perhaps 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds, then you get that effect that there are people moving a bit. Some people are standing still. Cars are rolling by, and sometimes they are rendered, and sometimes they're completely gone. And I find that fascinating.
Yeah. Is that the sort of time period that you've found works pretty well, that up to 5 seconds?
Yeah, for those type of shots, yes.
Yeah.
I like that too. I don't like the one where you do the exposure for so long that everything disappears. And it's just like you took a shot of a street with nobody there with a regular camera, you know?
I have a few of those, and I take them on a lecture to a photo club, where I say, "Hey, this is the train station of Brussels." I worked in Brussels for 3-4 days a week for about a year, at rush hour. The exposure time was 5 minutes, so the only thing you see are the stairs and the signs, etc., etc. So then people are amazed, but. You know, the amazing thing is you can clear out busy train stations with that.
And intersections.
Yeah.
What I think cities, just I want to come back to camera clubs in a minute, but cities are just a brilliant, brilliant place for pinhole photography. And I'm an hour from London, but we haven't been into London since January, I don't think. But you don't really need any kind of tripod, do you? I mean, as you said, you can just put that camera down on a window ledge, on a garbage can, on a level crossing box, you know, and capture whole moments of time.
Well, I have that.
It's just fantastic.
Those extremely small tripods, I think they're from Joby. Well, I bought them three in a blister, and they helped me just leveling the camera. So they're only, I think, in English... or in American, it's they're less than an inch high, but they help you level in the camera a bit. So for instance, you're putting it on a dustbin which isn't fully flat at the top, you can still put it and keep it steady.
Yeah, so I've got one of those Manfrotto Pixie little three-legged Pixie pinhole. Not perm, tripod things, you know. Do you know, it's like a round ball.
Oh, yes.
Little ball head and three small legs, about 6 inches each leg.
Yeah.
And, so you can be pretty mobile. But, yeah, I think plonking your camera down is anywhere you are is just a brilliant thing to do.
Yeah.
I was reading that Eric Renner, the late Eric Renner, his book on pinhole photography. We've mentioned it a few times on this show. And it's kind of the Bible when it comes to the history of pinhole photography. And Eric talks about in the 70s when there was just, pinhole photography, I suppose, was just being rediscovered. And lensed photographers, American lens photographers in the late 60s, early 70s, were becoming disillusioned. And they just wanted to find some other way of expressing what they felt about life, and discovering that you could make a small hole in a box and record chunks of time was a revelation then.
Yeah.
That's when they started putting film inside your mouth and using your lips as a pinhole.
Yeah.
I always, in my lectures, I always talk about there are two kinds of pinhole photographers. The first kind is those who experiment with all kind of, you know, dark things where you can put film in. You know, from a giant hangar. I once read an article about a giant hangar. Plane hangar. Is that proper English?
Yeah.
Which was turned into a gigantic camera obscura with large rolls of photographic paper. So that's one of the extreme ends. And then on the other end, there are people, you know, using pumpkins or walnuts or their mouth as the dark chamber. That's the first type of pinhole photographers, in my view, because they're just happy with turning all kind of subjects into a pinhole camera. And I have a book. I have a book about it where a guy turns things into pinhole cameras and then photographers the same things. It's called The Invented Camera by Joe Babcock.
Yeah, so, I have that somewhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he turns a guitar into a pinhole camera and photographs a guitar with that. So that's nice. But the other kind of pinhole photographers, and I think I'm one of those, are more interested in the special characteristics of pinhole photography, the infinite depth of field, the long exposures, the accidents and unpredictability of the technique. And whereas the first group of pinhole photographers always make their own cameras, the second one, including me, I made some cameras, but I don't see any objection in buying cameras. Because I'm interested in what they produce and not the thing itself.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with it. I'm definitely a number two.
Yeah, but that's okay. I made a few cameras, but yeah.
Did you the traditional cigar boxes and you know?
No, I haven't. No, I'm too lazy for that. So what I built myself were old medium format cameras, which I ripped apart and used, you know, the transportation stuff, and then replaced the lens by a pinhole.
Cool.
That's the simplest way, isn't it? Because with roll film, you know, you've got a back, like a Rolleiflex back or RB67 back. You can buy now from your man in America.
Yeah.
Who? You know, the guy who does Cameradactyl, Ethan Moses.
Oh yeah,
I think it's Ethan. Or it could be. Oh goodness me, I've forgotten now. Who's making the Graflock backs? I think it might be Ethan.
I'm out of touch on that. I don't.
Anyway, you can buy those just to if you're building your own camera.
Yeah,
you can buy the backs with the Graflock fitting on. Get the smaller ones, three and a half by four and a half or whatever it is for the RB67. Yeah. So you make a wooden box and put your pinhole in, and you're away, aren't you?
Yes, but what I did was. And one of the nicest cameras of this is, for instance, the Agfa Isolette, something like that, or the Isola. And then just cut away the harmonica thing with the lens on it, which then leaves you with a perfectly wide-angle pinhole camera. So I replaced I cut away or break away the door with the harmonica thing. Then you create a perfectly very wide field pinhole camera, which one of the first I ever made, is still one of my favorite cameras. And it's about the same camera in terms of how it gives a picture as the Reality Subtle 6x6.
Mm.
So it's very flat, etc. So the RSS 6x6 is now on its way to becoming my favorite camera for the 6x6 format. Yeah,
that's mine. That's the only one I use.
Yes. Do you also use the one with two holes or one?
I don't use the one, the F anymore with the filter ring. I have the one with the rise pinhole, the two pinholes with the one just above it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my
favorite. Yeah. I guess that's like my desert island camera or whatever. If I only had one to shoot with, it probably would be that one. I've shot so much with it. It's kind of always just kind of there, you know. So
yeah, it also beautifully renders buildings with the rise pinhole. So I love the way it does it. Yeah.
You get that what's called like a keyhole effect, a keystone effect, you know, like the top is flaring out. So
I have the F version, and I couldn't decide which one to purchase, you know, and I got my Reality a few years ago now, and now I kind of wish I had the one with two pinholes, but maybe I just wish I just need both, really, I think.
Yeah. They're both good cameras.
If I've got the two pinholes, I'll probably want to have those shots where I just want everything just bang in the middle, you know, with the horizon in the middle, because there are times when I want to get that kind of effect, and there are other times when I quite like to shift the horizon, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you in fact my the last post I made on my own website is about the holiday island of Rügen in the Baltic Sea, a German island. Those are almost all shot with the RSS 6x6, and almost all of them with the Reis pinhole.
Yeah. No, this isn't
a, that's a very nice looking, effect.
Are you talking on your Lens Loose site?
Yeah.
So folks listening, you can find Danny's work in a couple of places on Instagram, or if you just type in his name, Danny Kalkoven and Pinhole, then he has this sort of website blog type thing.
Yeah.
And I was looking at your Animorph pictures, but is there another, is there a more recent one than that? You were just talking about using the Rise. You talk about using the Rise function on your latest trip. Oh, yeah. I'm looking at 2018, that's why.
Okay,
no. Rügen, Holiday Island.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Yeah. So these are with your... So you're going to make me want this 6x6 Rise camera now.
Yeah. So you should, because...
You can't handle it, Andrew.
Well, I love that picture right at the top. Wow, I've just put it on the foot. I've got a big computer screen. I'm staring at a picture now, which is about 13 inches by 13 inches, and it's
the sky with the building.
Yeah, it's the sky with you're obviously using your top pinhole.
Yes. Yeah.
And you've got that weird space age type building with just some brilliant sky.
Yes. Yeah.
Light speed clouds.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see, you'd struggle to do that kind of picture with the center pinhole one. You'd get a different type of picture. You'd be forced to tilt the camera, which is fine as well, you know, but it would be different, wouldn't it?
It looks different, if you tilt the camera. Yeah.
Yeah.
I admit,
Sorry, carry on.
Although sometimes, and that's one of the negative points with this camera, sometimes I'm so excited about what I think will be a great picture, that I forget to open or close the correct pinhole. So sometimes I'm struggling with it. So what I now do is usually put my finger in front of it, then open the camera, the shutter, take my finger out, away.
Yeah, I do that too.
And then put my finger back when I think the exposure is done, and then I can close the
Yeah, that's exactly how I operate it.
Yeah.
That's exactly how I use a reality camera. Yes. But then you've got your, I don't know, it must be 6x17 of a big trumpet-shaped object with two buildings.
That was my, what is actually my current, and for the last 5 years or so, maybe 10 years, favorite camera, which is the 6x12. And that's the 8 Banners MB 6x12, which isn't produced anymore since a long time, but it's about the same as the 0-2000 6x12. So it has a variable inset, so you can use it from 6x4.5 all the way through 6x12, but I always used it in 6x12.
Oh, cool. The other one is Ondu, I suppose, that has the multi function.
Yeah, they all have the same principle. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I can now. I'm looking at it. I can see it's 6x12. I think I do love using my Reality 6x12, but I don't use it enough. I don't know whether it's just because it's fiddly to load.
It is maybe fiddly. I have the 6x17 RSS, which also has a arched film plane, right? And I use a pair of, how do you call it in English, fishbone tweezers to guide the film, because my fingers are too thick to
You got sausage fingers.
Yes. So
I used a pair of when you have like a first aid kit, like a medical kit, they have those bigger plastic tweezers.
Yes, also good.
I took a pair out of a first aid kit that we had. We kept those in my camera bag, and I used those for that whenever I was shooting that camera.
So that's a trick to load it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the guy who makes them is a very nice guy, because I once tried to improve my RSS 6x6 by gluing some stuff on the shutter, little shuttle balls to and that went well, that didn't work out good. Keep it at. So I could send it to him, and he repaired it like new. And now he's improved on his 6x12 and 6x17, because now they have, I think they have rolling guiders in it. So I mailed him, and for a very reasonable price he improved the 6x17 by me. So he replaced the
fixed shutter mechanism.
Yeah, the shutter mechanism, and he replaced the fixed rollers by rolling rollers, you might say, rolling guides.
I might have to give I might have to get in contact with James and ask him if he can do the same for my 6x12.
He's a great guy, James.
Yeah, because that relieves the tension on the you know, when you transport to the next one. Because I once used it on a cold day, and it was fully enabled. I was fully unable to transport it to the next exposure, because with my hand gloves on, it was you just couldn't turn the knobs, and when I took the gloves off, within a few minutes, my hands got so cold, I couldn't turn them also.
Yikes.
So,
James has been on the show a couple of times, and the last time he was on, he was talking about his camera, which I think he's now finished, but I'm not sure whether it's gone into sort of commercial production.
The Red Scale. Hello, James. How are you?
Yeah, hi, James. Yeah, he's talking about it. Updaters. Come on, James, updaters. Yeah. So it has two pinholes, one to shoot through the non-emulsion side and one to shoot through the emulsion side, so you can shoot Red Scale and
anytime
normal on one pinhole camera, which is kind of crazy.
I have a hard time imagining how that should work.
He's a mad scientist.
Yeah. he's a mad Irishman.
Yeah.
And you see what he's up to now. I'm glad you reminded me, because on September the 5th, so he probably posted this just before the last show, but we didn't speak about it. He says, I started something a little crazy, going to roll my own large format film. He'll be cutting down 8x10 X-ray film to 4x10.
Wow.
And making rolls with 10 or 12 sheets per roll. If that works, I'll make a 4x10 curved flame pinhole camera to suit the reels. kind of like a supersized RSS 6x17.
That's insane.
That's insane.
Wow.
So
we dare you to do it, James. Yeah. We dare you.
Well, I don't think he'll be making it commercially available, but I think he's just doing it for himself.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Cool. Wow. That'd be fun to watch. Check out.
But I must admit, I don't use the 6x17 that much because I don't like the bend horizon. When you tilt it somehow, just a little bit, the horizon bends, and I don't like the effect. So people who like it love it, but it's not for me. So I took it this year on holiday because we went to the north of the Netherlands, where there is the Waddenzee, we call it. It's a very shallow sea where you can even walk to an island because it's so shallow at low tide.
Yeah. Does that go to a church or an abbey or something, isn't it?
No, just the island.
Okay.
You need guide because it's a 3 or 4 hour walk, but with guide and you can join a group and walk from the mainland to the island at low tide. Mind you, you will be up to your chest in water sometimes when you cross some deeper locations. But then you get to the island. But there are also we Dutch are famous for, polders and making land from sea. So there were some polders outside of the dikes. So I took the 6x17 because that's a very wide open country with no trees, only, polder with some grass and a lot of black ground and mud and sea. So I took the 6x17 there because I imagined that suits that format well. But then I take care in keeping it horizontal.
Yeah.
Because I don't want that effect. I just want the wideness to be captured and not a round horizon somehow.
I don't know if you ever made pictures with one of the Horizon cameras or the Wide Lux or any of those type cameras, Danny.
Well, as a matter of fact, I just ordered a Horizon.
Which one have you ordered?
It already arrived. I ordered it in May something, and it was delivered in end of July. It took a little while. It is the US 500 or something like that, or the SU 500.
The one I have, it's advertised as new, old stock, isn't it, from the Soviet Union. So it's a great camera. But so where I live, Danny, which is a bit like Holland, because in the fenlands of the UK, these were reclaimed lands from the Dutch engineer Vermuyden came over in the 17th century and finished draining our area. So we have lots of black soil, peat, drainage dikes or ditches, and telegraph wires, electricity cables on poles going across this very flat landscape. So you take your Horizon camera and you get it level on the little bubble, so you get your know your horizon's going to be level. If you've got an electricity cable going across the sky above you, then that goes, that takes on a sort of rainbow shape. So you get the level horizon, but the lines above curves. So that's a load of fun. you'll have great fun. Mine has, if I use mine in bright sunlight or I keep it out of the bag too long, I get some light leaks. So I have to be a bit careful about what situation I use in, but, They can be a bit temperamental.
Well, for me, it's first encounter with 35 millimeters since many, many years. So I had some few experimental rolls to try the camera out. And my God, those negatives are small compared to your 6x12 or something like that.
Yeah, I bet.
So that's amazing. if you were accustomed to 6x6 or 6x12 or 6x17, and you take out the negatives of this horizon, wow. But I stumbled upon the Jeff Bridges, the American actor. He's using that kind of cameras all the time. Mm-hmm. He does great things with it. But you know, again, when I go to a lecture with a photo club, I show them my photographs sometimes with a beamer, but also enlargements and pretty large enlargements, and it's always so that almost exclusively amateur photographers with expensive cameras and expensive lenses, they are commenting on what they consider the lack of sharpness in pictures. And mm-hmm. all other people, they don't mind the sharpness. They just look at what the image conveys and what it says. And Jeff Bridges is also a kind of photographer who just wants to have fun and just take pictures, and who's not that much concerned with sharpness or technically perfect pictures. Although I can enjoy technically perfect pictures. A few years ago there was an Ansel Adams exhibition in London,
nice.
And I flew to London especially in the weekend for that exhibition, because he rarely comes to the Europe, so that was a chance to see him, and I have a few books by him. But when you see those magnificent images, you know, 1x2 meters tall,
they're humongous, aren't they?
Yeah, that's a different story.
Yeah, I saw his some of his work at an art museum here.
Yeah.
And it blew my mind. I mean, I was like, wow, just like Chris, it's nuts.
But on the other hand, a lot of famous iconic pictures are not technically perfect, are not sharp as you think they should. And even when you look at, we have, for instance, Rembrandt or Vermeer, you know, those famous painters who painted very precisely. If you look good at their paintings, they only paint detail, and you might say they only put sharpness to some spots in the image where they want people to look at. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the image is, well, less sharp and less exact and less detailed. So it's the same with a lot of good pictures who are not technically perfect, but they are simply good pictures.
I think it's what I like about it's what I like about large format photography, is that control over the focus plane. You know, if you can manipulate the eye to maybe just one area of sharpness
wherever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and then you can accentuate that even more if you tie that in with, you know, shadows and different levels of gradation, and you know how light sitting stuff, you can even put even more emphasis on it, you know.
You know, perhaps some vignetting or dodging and burning. Yeah.
Do you do any darkroom work, Danny?
Not anymore. I did it, but I think about 6 years ago, I noticed that my enlarger was not touched for over 2 years. So I threw them away. It was a huge enlarger. It went up to 6x9, dust. Yeah. But of course, I did first take the enlarging lenses out, and took them to there's a small shop here in Utrecht who deals in secondhand photography stuff. So he was interested in the lenses, but not in the enlarger, because it was too big. And I threw it out because I noticed that for 2 years I only did scanning. So mm-hmm. I have my usual work flow is that I take the images almost exclusively on medium format. I have them developed, and then I scan them with the Epson V600 scanner, which is good enough for me. The only thing is that it's it's slow. It takes 3 to 4 minutes for one image to scan, but I don't have a problem with that. But since I have that horizon, I plan to do some developing again. And I have bought a new developer tank because I threw that away also 6 years ago. So the same one as I always had, the Patterson with the white plastic spirals, because they were good. And I bought a bottle of Monobath developer. So I'm trying that out.
Yeah, I have some sitting in my darkroom, some of the Cinestill Monobath.
Yeah.
Do you like it?
I haven't used it yet.
Okay.
No. I haven't used it yet.
First I thought, well, that cannot be done. Monobath. And then I read some reviews and some comments. And I thought, well, let's give it a try. And
If all you're doing is scanning it, you know, I mean.
Well, yeah. I think the quality of negatives that folks are getting with the Monobath are really, really good, Corey. You know, I think darkroom users are using it.
Oh, cool. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I originally got it to use with my lab box, but then I sold my lab box to Rachel Brewster Wright, and so I don't have the lab box anymore.
Yeah, I think that if you're a really, really avid self-developer and you want a specific film and a specific effect, you know, on what contrast or ISO setting or something like that, and you're used to doing a specific kind of developer with a specific kind of agitation method and things like that, then you should not be doing Monobath, perhaps, because I think it's a general purpose developer for general purpose films with a general medium contrast and things like that. So you cannot do it, I think, with special purposes.
It makes makes film developing a little bit more accessible, doesn't it, to someone who perhaps wouldn't have thought of doing it?
Yeah.
What when you go and do your lecturing, is it just to camera clubs or do you do other groups? And what sort of people are you coming across and what are their reaction to your lensless photography?
Well, it's almost exclusively camera clubs. Mm-hmm. The last 6 months, there were none, of course, due to COVID. But before that, usually it's an evening. You know, usually camera clubs come together once every three weeks or something like that. And then a few times in the season, they have a guest lecturer like me. And then I go there and I divide the evening in two parts. The first part is about, you might say, technology. So I show them the cameras. I show them the tripods, the various cameras. You know, I also have the Blender. I also have the Anamorph, et cetera, et cetera. And I explain that you can take pictures with these very cheap or even home-built stuff. I even have there's an American paper artist who makes pop-up books. And she's made a pinhole camera. This book is a camera. So I take that one along. And
it's actually called This Book is a Camera, isn't it?
Yeah, it's called This Book is a Camera. Yeah. And so it's true, because it is a camera. And I took pictures with it with direct positive paper. So you can take pictures with it. It's beautiful. So I explain. So it's a technology start of the session. And most of the people, well, sometimes older people, they know. And then I tell them that in almost every professional, training, school at university in the Netherlands, where you are taught photography, most of them have, in each year or each semester, they have a pinhole assignment. Either create pinhole or take pinhole pictures, etc., to learn the students to go back to the very core of photography, of writing with light. So that's amazing to some of them. The funny thing is that more and more camera clubs are having younger people joining, and they also have to be taught about, or they're amazed about analog photography, because they all have digital cameras, and they hardly know about analog photography. So that's a learning curve for them. And the second part, so it's a lot of awe and ah, and does it really work? And how does it work? Well, it works just like your cameras, only a lot cheaper and without a lens. So
you should say magic. Look, it's magic, everyone.
It is magic, yes, yes. and then a lot of those camera club people know something about f-stop, you know, and their cameras go as far as sometimes f16, f32, something like that.
Maybe so say,
well, f64. Well, I don't think you're your average amateur SLR.
No, to
f64.
No.
So I tell them, well, these cameras have f150. And the Anamorph has F300. And then I have to pause for a few seconds to let that sink in. Because they try to imagine what happens. Well, and then I tell them about the extreme exposure times in their eyes. And that, yeah, and that suddenly, and then I show some of the special effects you can use with a pinhole. And I tell them about, well, we have in the Netherlands an artist, for instance, Bethany de Forest. She was the clever person who succeeded in getting the pinhole.nl URL to her name. So that's why my own website is called lensloos.nl, because pinhole.nl was already taken. You know, what you do with a focus shift, and the lens shift, is when you put the sharpness into one tiny bit of the image, which makes you kind of feel like you're looking at a small scale model of something. And I tell them then that with pinhole it's the other way around. You can take pictures of something very small, but because of the infinite depth of field, it looks like it's real life size. So pinhole isn't just a fun technique. It also has a lot of special, how do you say that, characteristics,
mm-hmm.
which you can use with your photography or with your imaging. And then the second part of the evening is just showing and talking about pictures.
Cool.
So I have a few series. And then a few regular ones, and then I pull out some of the enlarged anamorphs,
mm-hmm.
Which are also very nice and give the ooh and ah effect. So, and at the end, I hope, and sometimes I lend out the camera because sometimes people want to try it out. And at the end, I hope that they will get a sense of, hey, it's not the camera who makes great shots, it's the person working with a camera who makes great shots.
And who's all... pussycat? Who's yeah, pussycat is that?
It's not that's, mine. That's we don't Pete. Have cats. Yeah.
What's that's his name? My cat, Pete. Pete the cat. Pete. Petey.
Do you not feed Pete?
We do. I think he's hungry. He's a very boisterous personality cat. He has a lot of personality, and he.
Cats have a way of letting you know that they need attention, huh?
Get out of here.
So I have to ask you, Danny, mainly because you prompted us in an email. So Anamorph, is it a visual crutch? Is it a cheap trick or something else?
Yeah. Well, it is a cheap trick, of course.
Get out of here.
And when I first started with the Anamorph camera, I loved the cat. It comments some of the statements. But anyway, when I started with Anamorph, you know, I'm part of a small photo club. We gather at each other's homes because we're only with 10 persons or something like that. And some of the older members are not afraid of giving you criticism on your work, which is good, you know. especially the younger people always, everything you bring on is great and oh, interesting and nice. But some of the older ones are, yeah, they dare to be a little bit more critical. So, you know, discovering the Animorph, I bought the Vermeer Model 1, the wooden box from the Polish builder.
Cezary,
yeah. And, you know, I experimented with him and I had some few great shots and less shots. And then when I did that a few times, bringing prints with me by Animorph, one of them said, well, it's nice, but we've seen it now. So that started me thinking. And I asked them, okay, how? Well, if you use the Animorph just as a regular camera, and it becomes a trick. Because the way it's... wow. It's really hard.
Sorry. You should...
Is that the podcast equivalent of the cat sitting on your keyboard when you're doing computer work?
Yeah, pretty
something
much.
Like that, yeah.
He's gone.
But anyway, so we talked about it in our photo club. And then they said, that's what I know, when I use it, when I try to do it, if you take iconic and well-known structures or sites and you take them on with your Animorph camera, then it can work, you know, giving a different angle or a different view to things we all know, because then the effect is, hey, I know that tower or I know that high-rise building, but I never seen it like this. So that's one of the things I use with the Animorph. And the other thing I'm trying to do is, I don't know if you know the Dutch artist Escher.
Yes.
Who makes those graphic works. Yep. He sometimes has those up and down and left and right and front and behind bizarre things. So I'm now trying to catch mostly stairs or staircases or halls with lots of stairs.
Mm-hmm.
And with Animorph, you can turn them into something which gives a bit of Escher-like feel about it, you know, putting it on the side or things like that. So, like, it's, I know what it is, but still, when I look at it, it gives me a feeling of, I never looked at it like this. And is it, am I looking at it from behind or from above or from below? Things like that. So that's when you can use the Animorph to bring a kind of a wonder into things. And then, yeah, the fact that it creates circular stuff of straight lines, that's fantastic.
Distorts your reality.
I suppose what he was thinking about was, well, once you've seen one of those pictures, that's it, you know. It's a bit like a fisheye lens, you know. I mean, I've never had a fisheye lens, but I can imagine, you know, you'd use it a few times, and once the wow factor, you know, you can, what do you do with it, you know? So,
The effect is so strong that, and it's always there. You cannot use it in another way. So you have to be very careful and be careful not to become it a trick of its own.
Sure.
It can be used extremely creatively. We've had a few talented folks on the Lensless podcast, Michael Weitzman, for example, who's just written an article for Ilford. He would combine it with list prints, you know, and make beautiful otherworldly images.
For sure.
Cool. Yeah. Well, there you go. Corey, you can start building up your camera collection now again. And You must have a bit of pinhole gas just having two cameras.
Me?
Mm.
No, none. I haven't had it. I mean, I had it for a little while and now I've purged myself of it, you know.
Yeah,
I'm kind of a one camera, one film kind of person, you know. So, yeah, we'll see.
I think maybe you subscribe to that as well, because Danny, I was reading Before we started recording, I was reading your article you did about going to Venice for a short holiday.
Yeah.
And you only brought, because it was a family holiday, you thought, well, I won't bother to involve my family too much. I'll have one camera and 12 exposures. And then and then at the end of this article, you say, the lesson learned from that day, 12 exposures is all you need sometimes. Yeah. Corey, you'd say one exposure sometimes, wouldn't you?
Yeah. If I have that Boxster with me, that's it.
Yeah. Well, it was, we were on a holiday in the north of Italy. So we went to Venice for one day. So I thought, let's not bother the family too much. My children are still a bit younger then. They were at the age where they were embarrassed when their dad somewhere put the camera down on the floor and, you know, kept silent, kept it motionless for a few seconds. So they would quickly move a few meters away. I took one 6x6 camera and one roll of film, so 12 exposures. And that was, you know, what's the English phrase? A blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
Because you have to be very careful then what to take. And also I discovered that if you, and also when I go with the regular crew of my photo club on a trip, you know, they have digital cameras and they go click, 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 and they come home with hundreds of pictures. Mm. While I come home with, for instance, one roll of 120 film with six by 12 images. Here also, the day in Venice rendered me 12 exposures, more or less carefully selected of all those nice views you have in Venice. I did not need to bother to meter, because it was about a second each time, because it was a clear sunny day. And I think I have about 5 or 6 shots I'm really happy with. So if you're not banging away like a mitrailleur, I don't know the English word.
We understand what you mean.
But select and shoot carefully. You don't have that much work in post-processing.
Yeah.
Because there aren't a zillion photos to select from.
Yeah.
And with those zillion photos, dozens of them are about the same picture from about the same viewpoint with about the same composition. So it's really nice.
Uh-huh.
But then again, next time I will go to Venice, I will bring more than one film. Be sure of that.
But you'll still have the same mentality if you've got the one pinhole camera, even if you've got 3 or 4 rolls of film. It's still not a lot of images, is it? So you'll still be employing the same mental technique and approach to your image making, as opposed to using a digital camera or your iPhone.
I think that goes with you when you're an analog shooter, especially for instance, I never did that, but if you're a 4x5 shooter, it's even more, you have to be even more careful because, well, you don't have that many holders and that many exposures at your disposal.
And it's a bit of an effort to set everything up as well.
Yeah.
So after a while, you just want to make it count. Yeah.
Yeah. Unless James comes up with a roll film 4x5 machine.
Yeah. You never know.
Yeah.
And solve the world's problems, James. Yeah.
And it's also the beauty of pinhole. You have a lot of those very small, you might say, companies or people creating cameras. And because the technique is so simple, a lot of people can create cameras without the need of all kinds of lens machinery or creating shutters or whatever. No,
precision,
it's so simple. So everybody can do it.
Everybody.
And everybody then does it.
Yep.
Well, it's photography for the masses. And I probably on that note, we ought to start drawing things to a close. Danny, can I just say before we go, Holger Week is starting in a few days' time. I don't know. It starts on a Wednesday, which I'm sure there must be a reason for it. But October the 1st to the 7th.
I read about the
The Lensless Podcast are once again judges for the pinhole section.
Yep.
But basically, if you go to holgerweek.com, then you'll see Mr. Holger has done a great job with that website. They've got a great Facebook page, which is regularly updated. He has T-shirts and button badges. I don't know if there's any of those left. But you shoot your Holger various cameras through that week and upload 3 photos by November the 8th. And out of all of the submissions, I think he then selects a grand winner or something. I don't know.
Does it have to be a Holger or can you use Holger?
Yes, that's why it's called Holger Week.
That's a shame,
Danny, you mean you haven't got a Holger?
No, I haven't got a Holger.
Not even a Holger pinhole?
Not even a Holger pinhole.
For about €40 you can buy now.
You got a few days to track one down.
Okay, I got a few days.
Just get yourself Holger pinhole, WPC pinhole camera.
To be honest, the last camera that I bought was one of those Driftwood cameras by Sirgai.
Yeah,
that's all very nice. It's a kind of a magic thing in itself.
Yes.
Creating a pinhole camera out of driftwood.
Yeah. So that's I can say, Danny, if you can afford one of those, you can afford a Holger.
I know.
So no excuses.
Perhaps I'll do that. I will be in time. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, great.
You won't regret it, I guarantee.
No. No.
Well, thank you, Danny. I've really enjoyed listening to you.
Yeah, thanks for coming and talking with us.
Yeah, you're welcome.
When I first started speaking to you, you were saying your English wasn't up to it.
You're great.
Fantastic.
Thank you. That's because of my work. You know, I worked with a lot of English-speaking people.
Well,
I have to make presentations in English.
Your English, is better than my Dutch, put it that way.
Far better than mine. Yes. You think yours is bad, Andrew?
Mm-hmm. Well, Dutch is not that important as a language.
If you want to track... Go ahead, Danny. I'm sorry.
It was a pleasure talking with you. Yeah.
Likewise.
Yes.
Would you like to let everybody know where they can find you at to take a look at everything and ask you questions or talk to you or whatever?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. They can Google me. And my website is Lenslow, so that is lenslows.nl. Mm-hmm. And Lenslow translates in lensless, so I think that's appropriate for this podcast.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And I'm on Instagram. I think it's called Danny Kalkhoven, 59 Utrecht.
Yep.
So that's 59, Danny Kalkhoven, 59, something like that.
Mm. That's what I thought when I read your name.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Okay. Well, thanks for coming, and we will talk to everybody again soon.
Yeah. And you were to do some marketing of your own.
Oh,
at the end.
Take it away, Andrew.
What, me being the mercenary one, you mean?
Yeah.
So, somewhere we have a coffee account, don't we? We don't know how to access it, but apparently we do. Some people have bought us a cup of coffee. It goes toward Corey's retirement plan in 20 years' time. So go to coffee.com and look for the Lensless Podcast if you'd like to support the show.
And let's say everybody say hello to Kyle. Say hi, Kyle.
Huh?
Kyle is a guy on Instagram who contacted me and was talking about the show.
Okay.
So I just was going to say hello to him. He's in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Okay. Hello,
Kyle. Hello.
Kyle Rimple. Hi, Kyle. I just forgot to say hey to him. So, all right. So I hope everybody has a great week. And thanks for listening. And we'll talk to
everyone. Okay. Bye.
Bye,
bye.
Bye. Bye.
Oh.
Hello.
Hello.
Danny here.
Hello, Danny. It's Andrew.
Hi.
Okay. Andrew. So,
Now we're missing?
Well, let me just see if I can... Yeah, I'm logged in, you see, as Corey. because I couldn't. So now we need to get him on as well. So let me just try send him